Today on our monthly educational webinar, we're going to talk about investing in self-storage. And we have as our subject matter expert guest speaker is James Reed from the Investa Group. Just a couple quick housekeeping things. We will have a question and answer session at the end. Excuse me. So feel free to type in your questions at any point that you want in the Q&A box, and we will cover all the questions at the end. So you can ask them now, or you can ask them at the end, but we'll cover them at the end. So all right, let's get going. Just as we always do for those who are regular attendees of this, we put this this screen up, which in short says that the Entrust Group does not provide advice or legal advice, financial advice, tax advice. We are not advisors. We are custodians and record keepers of self-directed retirement accounts. And the presentation that we're doing is for educational purposes only. If this is something you're thinking of investing in, whether it's this or any other investment, and you want to do it in particular, if you want to do it with an IRA, we encourage you to talk to advisors, talk to CPAs, lawyers, anybody in your life who you have those kind of conversations with, but Entrust does not provide those advisory services. So this is what we're going to be talking about. I'm going to give a quick introduction about what Entrust does and who we are. And then James is going to take over and give an overview about self-storage and some market insights, what's the benefits and risks of investing in self-storage, some of the trends that they've been seeing. Identify and do a case study of a specific self-storage investment. And then, like I said, at the end, we'll get to a question and answer session. So that's me. I've been with Entrust for a little over 12 years. And my role is business development manager. Primarily, I educate people on how they can use their retirement accounts to invest in alternative assets. As far as asset Entrust is concerned, we've been in business since 1981. We currently have well over $4 billion in assets. Might need to be updated a little bit. I think we're at like 4.5. We've had in our life over 45,000 different investors. And one of the ways we differentiate ourselves from our competitors is we provide a single point of contact for anybody who opens an account. So I'm one of four business development managers. So if you're in my region or referred by one of my referral partners, so if you were to open an account with us to invest with Investa, if you were referred by them, then you would be assigned me and then my associate Jacob as your point of contact. So any questions, any help you need, you would come to me. If you're outside my region or referred to by a different referral partner that's under one of my colleagues, then you would have them as your single point of contact. We are administrators, custodians, record keepers of self-directed retirement accounts. The majority of us are certified IRA service professionals. We have offices throughout the United States where my colleagues, business development managers are located. Our trust company is out of Tennessee. We're headquartered in Oakland. We do in-person presentations and we do these monthly webinars. And then we also sometimes get invited to be on other people's webinars who are going to present their offering. And then we talk about how they can invest inside their retirement account. So if that's something you're interested in, don't hesitate to reach out. We have a continuing education program for certain positions, such as realtors, financial advisors, CPAs. We have a class where you can get continuing education credit. And then we have our biannual IRA Academy, where we educate other people in the retirement space on how they can pass the certified IRA services professionals. We basically educate them and help them take that class or take that test to pass that designation CISP. So what exactly is a self-directed retirement account? It is a retirement account, a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, a SEP IRA, whatever type of retirement account you have. It is one in which you have it with a self-directed custodian in which you can then invest in non-traditional investments and the custodian doesn't provide any advisory services. So, for example, if you have an IRA with a Merrill Lynch, Charles Schwab, Fidelity, a company like that, they will provide advisory services. And because they are responsible for providing advice, they're also not willing to hold certain assets. So they aren't willing to hold real estate or a lot of private equity or private debt or precious metals, like investments that are considered non-traditional. You need a self-directed custodian. That's where the Entrust Group comes in. You can open an account with us, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, whatever type it is. Instruct us to make the investment that you want to make, and we will process and hold that investment as long as not specifically prohibited by the Internal Revenue Code. So because of that, you're not limited to just stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The IRS says you can invest in pretty much anything you want, but you just have to have your account with a custodian who's willing to process and hold whatever investment is that you want to make. So that's where the Entrust Group comes in. But we are subject to all the same regulations and rules and requirements that any other custodian, that a Merrill Lynch, a Charles Schwab, a Fidelity is when it comes to the custodial and record keeping services. So annual reporting to the IRS, you have online access to your account to review statements. We provide all those same record keeping services. Again, the only difference is that we don't provide the advisory services, and therefore we don't do any due diligence on the investment you want to make. That's your responsibility. And we will hold non-traditional investments. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and let James take over from here. Just real quick background. James and I first met. Now you can go ahead and move to that next page. So James and I first met earlier this year. I was at a real estate investment conference, and James's group had a booth at the event. And so I approached and started talking to him to ask about, their experience of working with IRA investors, self-directed IRAs, what, you know, the knowledge was, and had ended up a pretty productive and long conversation. And also, you know, we hadn't done a presentation on investing in self-storage for, if we've done one, it's been a few years. And so I thought it would be a good opportunity to have him come on and share his knowledge about the industry with you. So at this point, I'm going to go ahead and mute myself and let James take over. And then I'll be back again at the end for the Q&A. So I encourage you to type in any questions that you have, and we'll cover them at the end. Go ahead, James.
Sounds great, Bill. Can you hear me okay, Bill?
Can hear you fine, yeah.
Sounds great. I was just trying to share my screen on the video wise. It looks like it's not allowing me to share my video. So Andrew may be able to help with that. If not, no big deal. Just wanted to make a comment for us. So, but we'll go ahead and get started here, guys. Bill, again, I appreciate you allowing us to be on your platform today. Just really excited to kind of just share more a global perspective on the self-storage industry. Like you had mentioned, we run several companies regarding self-storage with Investor Group, Storco Storage, and BBI Constructors. And I wanted to kind of give a little bit of background of how I was able to actually get introduced to storage. I think it's a very unique story. I had experienced a fire where I lost my house and my business to a fire. And I realized I found myself using storage. And there's a lot of ways that you can help someone going through troubling times. Because if you think about the use of storage, typically there's some form of incident, downsizing, divorce, relocation. There's a lot of demand for storage. And this is how I found storage. So realizing you can help a lot of people. And there's also a lot of money to be generated in self-storage. So since that day, we sold all of our other companies and went into storage full time. As we get into the introduction for the self-storage, just a quick, we're vertically integrated with our investment firm, our construction company, and then our in-house Storco Storage in-house management company. That way we're able to control the process from start to finish with all of our companies. And then our quick strategy, we focus in on existing, buying existing facilities, conversions like a vacant Kmart and new development is part of our three strategies that we use within our platform. And then we're just a little bit of our team with our different divisions. Each division has their own head, and we continue working through all of our aspects of our companies. And then today, like I said, there's going to be plenty of time for Q&A. So please reach out and write into the comments. A global perspective on the storage industry. If you think about the use of it, 1 in 10 Americans rent a storage unit. And you can also see that we're about well over $40 billion as an industry. It's one of the fastest growing real estate for over the last 40 years. There's just a lot of, and you look at the national vacancy at 93.6% of our current occupancy level. And then if you look at the top right, you can see over the years of the construction spin year by year. I'm going to try sharing my screen now with the camera. Let's see here. Looks like it's not going to let me share it again, but it's okay. I had mentioned earlier, so you think about the use of self-storage. Why would someone use self-storage? And we talk about the four Ds of self-storage with death and relocation, downsizing, and divorce is a lot of our demand at our stores. And then we have the other perspective is too, is the private ownership leads the asset sales in 2022. So a lot of the larger REITs are buying up the smaller operators because the majority of our real estate class is still the mom and pop. So it gives us an opportunity to go in and purchase the mom and pop operators, continue to add in procedures and processes to actually run the stores at a higher efficiency. And then you can see here that a lot of the ones that are selling are going to be the private owned properties. And then the market is probably the biggest thing I want to talk about today because it's really about a supply index perspective. And if you think about self-storage, it's really about dominating the 1, 3, and 5 mile radius. Where other asset classes may have a larger range, we're really micro-focused in a very tight radius. And when we're talking about supply, it's both plus and minus on the aspect of the pros and cons, because ultimately we want to understand the marketplace and the development pipeline. So when we're looking at the supply index, what type of growth is happening in the market? We need to make sure that we're being competitive, outsmart the competitors, and some areas are already grandfathered in, and what type of population growth is coming in that market? Because ultimately the more people that are moving in, the more demand there is. And we have to track those development pipelines to understand the risk and reward in that marketplace. With it only being a 1 to 5 mile radius, you can really narrow it down into the demographics to understand that marketplace. I just want to share a little bit about the occupancy trends. So we look back at, 2016, we're looking at maybe 80, 85% occupancy. And then the last 5 years, we've really been kind of floating around that 90 to 93%. So when we're looking at a global perspective on the occupancy trends for the self-storage industry, we've had a really good run in the last 5 years, and we continue to see that run coming. So when you're looking at the asset class, overall, the occupancy level that we have at the stores. And then also on the asking market rent per unit. So we have both the East, Midwest, South, and in East. And as you look at all these different ranges per unit, it ranges from about 90 to about 170. That just kind of gives you perspective. Each market has a different perspective on their demand, on their price that they're asking per unit. And then this is a very interesting chart because you can see the construction trends, both regarding of the starts, renovations, and then the new square footage. So this kind of gives a perspective of what it's been trending like over the years for the new supply in the market. And the reason why I talk about new supply is the big piece of the puzzle when it comes to some of the lease up periods and in the how much discount is given when you have several stores that are opening up in a market for you. And then a demographic. So when you're looking at a property, both as if you're looking to buy it yourself or if you're looking to invest, it's important to understand the demographics in that marketplace. So when you're able to dive into the market, referring to the population growth, the average household income, home ownership, and even lifestyle. As you all know, there's a lot more remote management happening. So that's also playing a role in our division of the self-storage classification. And then operations. So we have several options here. So there's third-party options where if you were to buy a facility, you can hire a third-party management to actually manage that facility for you. You can also self-manage. And there's a lot of operators now are looking doing a hybrid model where it's remote management. You can see here at one of our locations, We have a hybrid model here where we have both self kiosks and staff on site. That way we're able to help our client no matter where they're coming from, both on their cell phone to walking in, or if we're not present, they're able to log in and actually run a unit. A lot of this really came from COVID too, when there was a lot of, you couldn't meet people in person. So there was a lot of technology driven through the COVID period where we're able to really fast forward our industry into tech, even down to, we'll share a little bit later, but even using your phone to get in and out of your storage unit.
Hey, James, if you don't mind, if I could just jump in real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that one slide back there. Just for those who are considering, if you're considering doing this kind of investment using your retirement account, self-management is not an option, right? So you wouldn't be able to, you or any other disqualified person wouldn't be able to manage the unit, right? That's that would be a prohibited transaction. So I just do, like, I wanted to throw that in before I forgot it, that, you know, bear that in mind if you are considering doing something like this with your retirement account.
Bill, I greatly appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. So appreciate the clarity on that. And this is identifying some of the benefits and risk. So I think one thing to consider is, what has it been like with self-storage? You know, historically, if you're looking back at the different asset classes, because there's multiple asset classes that you can invest in. This chart here represents from February 2020 to February 2022. So the 2 years that we were going through COVID, how did we perform as an asset class? You know, you can see at the bottom that here on the left, we have the self-storage, industrial, and all these different apartments and other asset classes. And you can see here that we performed very well as an industry throughout that period. And even looking back to 08, 09, 010, there was a lot of performance with our industry. Because storage, you know, it we fill up during both growth of economies and even down economies. We're very, very resilient because we're needing storage at different times of those experiences in our economic metro area. So this just gives a perspective, if you look at this chart, and how we were able to outperform the majority of the other asset classes during COVID. So that's just one thing to consider when you're looking into any real estate class. You know, what historically have they done? What does it look like in the future? And I hope today is just a general overview of the storage industry. As I mentioned, we'll have more time with Q&A at the end of the presentation. We talked about some of the benefits. One is, you can see here that the top buyers of 2022 were a majority of your publicly traded companies. And what that means is that these publicly traded companies are out buying properties off of mid-size operators. So when we're looking at ourselves, when we're out buying properties, we're able to continue to inquire them and looking to sell to a REIT, a publicly traded company. That way we have a larger multiple, and we're building our facilities to meet their demand of what their buy box is, you know, what they're looking for. We're looking for those type of properties. That way, either a long-term or we go to sell, we have an opportunity to have it bought by one of the REITs or a very large mid-range operator. But you can see here on the graph of how many they're buying of last year, the square footage of the volume in sales and millions of dollars with this chart here. This is a graph that's really interesting because you can see here, this goes back to 2010. This graph is representing the larger operators coming into the industry. So as you can mention that most of the history of self-storage has been your mom and pop stores for the majority of its life. Then you have your handful of REITs. But now, especially since COVID, you've had a lot of operators that are in different asset classes that were holding on their money, sitting on their money during COVID, not knowing what to do. And then now they're reviewing how we performed during COVID. They're moving a lot of their funds and capital over into the storage industry. So you can see year after year, there's additional capital being poured into our industry. That's giving us some very historical highs per square foot for purchase of properties. So you can see that's starting to get a lot more institutional capital into our marketplace, but it still gives us a very large opportunity because there's still the more than 50% of the supply is still mom and pops in the United States. So it gives us a great opportunity to go out and continue to purchase. This is giving some of the development. So some of the risk side of the aspect of self-storage would be our construction timeline of our properties. If you're looking to either build or convert, it's taking a lot longer time to go through that process. So you have a lot more capital that you'll have to hold on to during that time of the construction timeline. So this is just gives you a chart of the perspective plan and under construction. And you can see here a lot of the time is in the planning. A lot of your cities and communities, you know, aren't always wanting self-storage. So they're really, you know, pressuring us as operators and developers to really, you know, kind of file through those processes. A lot of times that the communities are wanting mixed use perspective. So there's been a lot more challenging aspects of getting storage approved. But most of those areas that are challenging have some upside, because if it's a challenging area to get approved, there's going to be less development, giving you a longer run of your lease up and stronger rents potentially in that marketplace. But hopefully this graph gives a perspective of actually the time from start to finish, what you're looking at a construction perspective. This is kind of the street rates. So you can see here, there's still flexibility throughout the rental rates. This is on a 10 by 10 non-climate unit. So you can kind of see where we kind of dropped off during COVID. And then after COVID, we really launched off with our rates. So there's still flexibility, but you can see here the year over year, month over month, and then the current perspective on the change with the 10 by 10. And 10 by 10 is typically your average unit size. So when you're looking at different graphs, most of our graphs and charts are going to reference a 10 by 10. That's kind of your national unit size that most demographics will point to. And then we're looking at the future and current trends. This gives you a perspective of how many stores were sold both in 2021 and 2022, but also different classes. You have your Class A, and your Class A property is going to be, you know, your main cities, probably multi-story, climate controlled. Your Class B is going to be more your mid suburbs, and then your Class C is your more rural area, maybe non-climate. So each line represents a different classification on your facilities. And then you can see here over time, we've really ramped up the price per square foot. So when we're looking to sell a property, you can see here it's really ramped up over the last few years. Now, going back a few slides, we talked about how all the institutional money is coming into the marketplace, really driving these numbers. And when these numbers are being drove, there's a lot more time being spent on development, because ideally you can develop something lower than you can buying something at a high number when you have an influx of so much capital coming in the marketplace. Give an example like ourselves, we're mainly development, new development or conversions is what we've been focusing on. We're having more of a long-term play ourselves, but hopefully this chart gives you perspective. There's an incline of opportunity. But you also want to make sure that you're buying right in this marketplace. So understanding both the demographics and your partner or your, you know, wherever you're investing, understanding where they're buying their assets. You know, we talked about trends. A lot of us are now working remote. So that's bringing a lot more movements to different communities, different states. You know, if you think about space, several years ago, you know, your spare bedroom was your spare bedroom. Now it could be an office space. It could be a classroom for your children. So there's been a lot of new users of self-storage. And historically, once you use self-storage, you're more likely going to use it again. So this entire work remote perspective has really added additional, tenants, and client base to our storage facilities. Also technology, I had mentioned, you can see here on one of our facilities, we don't have any physical locks. You can see the kind of the red light here, this red dot. You actually utilize your cell phone to get in and out of your facility or in and out of your unit now. What that does for us or for the industry, it allows us to streamline the process. It allows us to have a more remote management at our store versus cutting the locks. We are able to go into our database when they're not paying their rent to do the lien process. And while we're talking about that, that's what's unique about our asset class too. Historically, you have let's give an example like apartments. You know, you have to evict them. You have to have all this time to give them time to get out. Where storage, every state's a little bit different, but on average, it's about 45 days, and we're able to auction off their products in lieu of the lien against the storage unit. So we're able to send out the lien, go to auction, and then the auction, whoever buys the auction, is in charge of cleaning out the unit, and then now we're putting the unit back in inventory. So it's a much quicker turnaround than if it was like an apartment complex. In that perspective. So a lot of the lien laws are in our favor within the storage industry, which is another positiveness to our asset class. Another perspective is remote management. I had mentioned earlier that we have more of a hybrid approach where we have the kiosks available throughout the whole operating hours at our stores. And we also have management during working hours at our facility. And some facilities are unmanned. And what unmanned means is that they'll have the kiosk and they'll have somebody offsite managing it from afar, still taking phone calls, still taking all the additional contacts to help them rent a unit. But it's able to help with the NOI, drive down the expenses and increase the NOI at each store. It's really based on, you know, the hub and spoke model or how companies are set up to be able to perform at that level. You know, potential self-storage investments, you know, I think that there's, in Bill, I know you had mentioned the direct, you can't personally direct, you can't use self-directed 401k to own your facility. But the way I wrote this one is that there's ways that if you're not using your self-directed 401k, it's just a perspective of direct versus passive. And it's going to be.
Your retirement account could hold directly. Sure.
Do what?
Just, yeah. But the issue potentially is the managing of it. Which we're going to cover. There was already a Q&A question or comment about that. So I'm going to cover sort of that in a little bit more detail. But no, if you want to have an IRA hold direct title, like just the same way that a retirement account, a self-directed retirement account can own a rental property, for example, it can own storage units directly. It doesn't have to be structured through an LLC or anything like that.
No, that sounds great. No, I appreciate that. So I'll go to the next slide here for us. So this gives us perspective. So one is, you know, you have direct ownership, you have investing in a REIT. So your publicly traded companies, here's a few that I had pulled up that you'll see on the stock exchange. And then the other opportunity is syndications like myself with Investor Group. You can invest alongside us with our investments. You know, and when we think about investing in self-storage, I think there's really like three big buckets that we can invest in. One is going to be existing that you can see here in this photo, you know, where you're able to purchase this or we're able to purchase this and add additional procedures, rebranding, really work on the rent management side of the house. So a lot of operators and other companies like ourselves are out looking to buy existing facilities. The conversions, this one here was actually used to be a trampoline park that we purchased and built a two-story inside. So imagine coming across a vacant Kmart. There's a lot of operators that are looking at conversions and converting those buildings into self-storage. So that's another bucket that could be invested in to purchase and develop self-storage. And of course, you have new construction based on the marketplace and where those are going to be in demand. A little bit of case study. So I mentioned about the trampoline park. It used to be actually a grocery store at one point. And then we purchased the trampoline park and built a two-story facility in this unit here in O'Fallon, Missouri, of roughly about 717 units. We have two stories. It was built back in 1979 and then reconverted it in 2020. And then we have about 67,000 square feet. And it also came with a retail center. You can see here on the left-hand side with triple net leases. So what's neat about this is that it's an infield development. And what that means is that there's not a lot of, everything's developed around this property. So when it comes to potential new supply coming on the market next door, is a little more challenging because everything's developed. We were able to take this grocery store slash trampoline park and convert it. And we were able to purchase the property below replacement cost. So we were able to purchase this below if what it would cost us to build it. And then with it having 7 acres, we have the ability to sell out outlots for like additional retail or fast food restaurant. Of course, there's a high unmet demand in that 3.5 mile radius due to the fact that everything's developed around this property. And then the strip center just provided us additional income on day one. So just kind of giving a perspective, a case study with a conversion opportunity. We also converted a Chevy dealership that had 15 acres, and we were able to subdivide some of the outlots to recoup some of our initial investment. So the conversions have been a great opportunity for us to go out and purchase and buy and convert with that perspective. This slide here, this goes all the way back to 2000. You can see here that the average sale price was $48 a square foot. Average cap rate is 9.6. And let's fast forward to 2022. You know, we're looking at 153, you know, we're talking about three times as much in only a little over 25 years. And then the cap rate is 5.5. So it's really been, as I had mentioned, a very mom and pop industry. And now we're starting to get more of the institutional money capital coming in, but we still have over 50% of the supply still on the mom and pop's operations, where it gives us an upside to go out and purchase these and make them more effective and raise the NOI versus that's giving us a larger cap rate in that perspective. Just an overview. You know, as developers, we continue to look at the redevelopment. You know, as an investor's perspective, you know, we're starting to look at some of the aging demographics. You know, what does that look like when they start to go into retirement? Some of the generations, you know, how are they starting to lease and purchase self-storage? You know, and, you know, the cross-sector capital continues to play an important role. So those are just some of the, you know, like global overview for 2023. With that perspective, with our industry. I know we definitely have some Q&A here shortly that we can open up, but just want to give a perspective on that. And Bill, like I said, here's just information that they have on me based on questions they may have. So Bill, if you'd like to maybe open up the Q&A, or what would be the next step for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and jump into the Q&A. If you want to go ahead a couple of slides or one or two slides, it'll have, there's just real quickly for us, our next webinar, we're going to be talking about real estate investing lessons that from past recessions. And as always, please at the end, provide feedback on this presentation, as well as if you have any topic requests you want for future events. And if you need any information on our on self-directed IRAs and different investments, go to our website, theentrustgroup.com, and we have a learning center on there that has a lot of information, including a lot of past webinars that we've done. And then you can follow us on social media. All right, and if you go to the next screen, that's the one more after that. We're going to leave this screen up. So this has doesn't have James' phone number on there, but it has his email, and then you have my contact information on there. So we'll just leave this up while we go through the Q&A. Feel free to type those in. I've got a couple teed up and ready to go here, so I'm going to jump right in. So the first one, which was typed in after I had jumped into your presentation, James, and made the comment about self-management, the person made this comment, says, under a self-directed IRA, an individual can manage the facility, rent units, collect rent, et cetera. They just can't perform work on the facility, mow grass, paint units, et cetera. So that's more of a comment than it is a question. And I'll expand on that a little bit. So largely you're correct in that, you know, physical labor and I associate it with any real estate. If you own like a rental property in your IRA, you're not allowed to both stay in the property and you're also not to do any physical labor on it. So you can't paint it, you can't do maintenance on it, et cetera, et cetera. That same thing is going to apply to a storage unit. When you own a rental property, as an example, and I'll bring this back to storage units, there's no rule that says you can't manage the property from a standpoint of if you have a tenant and they have questions or they need, you know, someone to come out and do work on it, they can call you and you can call a plumber or somebody to go out and do the work. And they can also send you the rent, but you have to turn around and forward the rent to the IRA. It can't be held in your own account that you've set up personally on behalf of the IRA, right? Unless you structure it through an LLC, that's a whole different thing. But if your IRA holds direct title on a rental property, then the rent has to be paid to the IRA. Although you can show a tenant the property, you can collect the rent and have it forwarded to the IRA, that type of thing. Where I had jumped into James's thing and said, you can't self-manage the storage unit. What I was picturing is, you know, he's showing facilities, right, that have what, hundreds potentially of different units. If your IRA is an owner in one of those units, managing that is likely going to be a full-time job. You can't have, like, when an example of, if you have a rental property in your IRA and you have to occasionally show a new tenant the property and they're going to send you the rent, like, you can do that in the evenings. You can do that while having a full-time job, and you also can't be compensated for that. But if you're doing that for a storage facility, the likelihood is that's become your job. You can't do that. That's considered improper benefit that's being made to the IRA. So what you're saying is technically true from a standpoint of your own rule. If, like, let's say your IRA owns just one unit in an entire complex, and, you know, you're turning around and subletting that. I don't know if that's even a thing, but, you know, or if you own, let's say, a dozen units and it doesn't require a significant portion of your time, then yes, you could likely manage that yourself. But that's different than managing a facility. Managing a facility would be extensive amount of work, and the IRS is not going to look at that and say that that's not violating the self-benefit rule. So if you're using your IRA and you're investing in, like, a major facility, you're not going to be able to self-manage that. The next question, does owning storage units with a self-directed IRA trigger unrelated business income tax? If you're using leverage, if you're using borrowed money, then undoubtedly, like, anytime you're using borrowed money to invest in anything, you know, real estate related, it's generating what's called unrelated debt financed income tax, which is just another side of the UBIT coin. And it operates as, if your IRA generates a certain amount of income, a percentage of that income came from borrowed money, came from outside the IRA. So that equivalent percentage of the income that was generated is subject to a tax, because in the IRS eyes, income wasn't earned by the IRA. It was earned by income, by money that came from outside the IRA, borrowed money. If you're talking about simply the idea of investing in a storage facility, and, you know, without necessarily using leverage, paying all cash, is that subject to UBIT? It could be. That would be a conversation you'd want to have with a CPA in terms of whether that specific investment would be subject to UBIT. But it certainly could be, and it would be something to consider. Okay, so the next question. I was thinking we were going to talk about the different strategies that groups are offering for storage investments. I've seen some that have timelines for buy-in and sell that give the investor options and some that do not. I've seen some that offer dividends and some that do not. Some project higher returns and some project lower, but I'll say it is performance dependent. So our webinars, I'm going to let James jump in to see if he has any comments on this, but our webinars are educational only. We don't allow the presenters, our subject matter experts, to talk about return on investment for their investments and dividends and things like that. Now, James, I mean, feel free if you have some general, like, comments around different ways that people can invest that involve, you know, like what he's saying, some that have timelines for buying and sell that give the investor options and some that do not. I mean, they may have those, we don't allow them to talk about it. We don't allow our presenters to talk about that, because then we're crossing the line of basically selling an offering on behalf of these investment sponsors, and that's not a role that we're allowed to do.
No, I appreciate it, Bill. And it's a great question. I think that it really comes down to understanding the syndication and the sponsor on what their business plan is. I think that every sponsor has their own business plan and execution of how they're going to reach certain returns. So as a general term, syndication is where like investor group, we go out and re-raise capital for our investments. And over a period of time, we're able to pay out different returns to our investors based off the performance of the asset class, which is self-storage, to give those returns to them. So I think it just mainly comes down to understanding their business plan and their overall objective of how they're going to get to those returns for their investments. But as you said on this call, it's more educational. I'd be glad to take an email at any point or have them connect with our investment side of our company to learn more about those investment opportunities. But I think it's very important to kind of underwrite the sponsor in their, what their plans are and understand their moving forward, what they, how they're going to receive those returns.
Okay. So one question that asks about the risks that didn't seem to get covered as much in the presentation. So it says, what are the risks of that you sort of mentioned in the presentation but didn't cover in detail?
Yeah, I would say the biggest risk with storage is going to be your supply and demand. I had to mention that everything kind of revolves around supply and demand in those marketplaces. So, you know, if there is a lot of development in one metro area, or let's say that you're trying to dominate that 1 to 5 mile radius, and someone goes out and buys a storage property, and there's many more that get built in that same area, it could be overbuilt, which would mean that it would take a longer time to lease up. Or if you have an existing property, you're not going to be able to push rates as strong as you typically are, because the new developments are really giving a lot away, a lot of discounts to get people into their doors. So I think some of the risk really falls onto the market and how much new supply is coming in. And some of that dictates by some of the level of entry. You know, some cities have very tight rules that it's very challenging to get in. And then some have no zoning where you can build as much storage as you want next door. So really understanding the demographics, understanding the level of entry inside these communities and what is coming down the line. So when we're looking at a property, we're always reviewing data and understanding who's in the planning phase, who's in the approval, and who's constructing new storage. With us being more on the development side, we're always chasing that information so we can understand our risk level moving into a new market or expanding in a market based on who else is looking to buy or build or expand to give us understanding of that risk. So I would say one of the larger risks is just the kind of overdevelopment perspective in a market could be that risk portion is where we mainly focus in on maybe an oversupplied market. I hope that kind of helps some of that answer some of that risk.
Okay, James, who can be a management company for self-directed property and the cost? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Are they referring if they're going to be using their self-directed, or can you clarify that, Bill?
I think it's either one. Who they said for a self-directed property, but I mean, you know, who can be a management company for obviously you guys have one, right? But,
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think there are several companies out there, Bill, that are third-party management. So they'll come in and manage the store. They could manage it under the same name that it's there. Some third-party management will rebrand that store. Give an example, Extra Space, they'll come in and manage that facility. Each third party has their own requirements. So if it's too small of a property, there's several that will do it, but there are other third party managements that will manage that for them based on the size of their facility. So typically you would just kind of research and look up and research third party management and see if that fits their requirements for your location.
Do you have like a general like cost?
Very fair. Thanks, Bill. Historically, typically it's like 6% of gross is what your typical third party management will charge for that fee for management is about 6% of gross.
Okay. So next question says, what about joint venturing between personal funds and self-directed IRA funds? So what you're talking about here is called partnering your IRA. And yes, you're about to partner your IRA with your personal funds on any investment that you want to make, as long as you do that partnering arrangement at the time of investment. Now, when I use the term partnering, I'm not talking necessarily about a legal entity. It doesn't mean that you have to create like a limited partnership or any kind of entity to partner. Although creating an LLC can oftentimes be a benefit when you're looking to partner your IRA with your personal funds, but it's not required. So if you wanted to invest in anything, if you wanted to invest in real estate, if you wanted to invest in a syndication, into private equity, into private debt, you can set up the agreement, the investment agreement, where it lists your IRA as a percentage owner based on how much money the IRA is putting in, and put yourself personally as a percentage owner. So when I say put your IRA as a percentage owner, the name of your IRA with us is the Entrust Group for benefit of your name and account number, or the Entrust Group FBO. We shorten the for benefit of to FBO. So the Entrust Group FBO, your name and account number, and then whatever percent your IRA is going to own, again, based on how much money is being contributed from the IRA or being invested from the IRA. And then you would list yourself, you know, Joe Schmo, as the individual investor, your own name, at whatever percent you're going to be an investor based on how much money you're investing out of your personal fund. So that's allowed. Whatever type of investment you want to do, you're allowed to do that partnering arrangement. But again, you have to set that up. You have to create that investment at the time of investing, you partner. So if you, let's say, invest into investment property, and you then want to add yourself on later on as a partner, or vice versa, if you already own an investment property and you want to add your IRA on as a partner, at that point, it's too late. They are now created a prohibited transaction. You have to create that partnering arrangement at the time that you make the investment. Okay, next question says, does Entrust have an account to invest rentals from IRA fund? Well, you can invest in rentals from any type of account that you have with Entrust. I mean, you can use a traditional IRA, Roth IRA, SEP IRA, 401k. You can use any type of account that you have to invest in investment property. If you're asking, we don't have rental units for you to purchase. We're just a custodian and record keeper. So you have to go find the property you want to invest in, and then, or the, you know, in this case, a rental unit or storage unit or a syndication. If you want to invest in any of those types of things, you can do it inside any type of retirement account. You'll just establish that type of account with Entrust and then instruct us to make that investment. I hope that answers your question. James, here's one for you. Do you guys require accredited investors?
We sure do. So when we raise capital, we have the requirement of the accredited investors to raise capital within our funds.
Okay, so the next one has to do with one of the charts, I guess you showed. It says, why was the store sold was 1547, but is only 23 in 2023?
Yeah, Bill, that's a great question. So when this data was pulled, this was pretty early on 2023. So there was a little bit of lag of data to be pulled. So basically, I think this was pulled probably first quarter, maybe first 1 or 2 months in 2023. So that's why there's a reduce in numbers.
Okay, the next question again comes back to the original question around self-managing, and just a comment, and then I'm going to respond to this. Says the person says that he personally has 3 facilities which he manages on the side for about 10 hours per month, and that his facilities have approximately 200 units total. So okay, I mean, look, you're in a gray area. When you're self-managing a piece of real estate, which is what storage units are, you know, it's just another type of real estate investment. Anytime you're self-managing a real estate, you're falling into a gray area of what may or may not be considered prohibited transaction. There's nothing that you can go into the Internal Revenue Code that specifies exactly how many hours you can work, or exactly what, you know, what number of units you can hold, or any, like, it doesn't, it's ambiguous. It doesn't provide specificity. We recommend that anybody who has real estate inside their IRA use a third-party manager. That's what we recommend, just to be safe. But there's nothing in the code that says that you have to. But there are rules around what's called the self-benefit rule. And it says about you can't provide a direct or indirect benefit to your IRA. Self-managing a piece of real estate could be considered an indirect benefit or even a direct benefit. So look, I'm just saying that as long as nothing's, you not have any issues with it, the IRS isn't beating down your door, then good for you. But you're definitely in the gray area of what's considered prohibited versus not prohibited. It's not black and white. So next question, it says self-management not allowed, you said, for Roth IRA, I know, but for traditional IRA, self-directed IRA is the same. Yes, the rules around prohibited transactions and disqualified persons, which is ultimately what I'm talking about here. There's rules around who is a disqualified person, and a disqualified person's not allowed to provide certain services to their IRA. For example, if you're an accountant and your IRA is invested in a business, you're not allowed to provide accounting services for that business that your IRA, depending upon the percentage, let me qualify that, depending upon the amount of ownership that your IRA has in that business. That's just one example. There is what's called a self-benefit rule that falls under that prohibited transactions and disqualified persons rules. That applies to all retirement accounts and health savings accounts and Coverdale educational savings accounts if you self-direct those. So it doesn't matter if it's a Roth, it's traditional, the prohibited prohibited transaction rules, disqualified persons rules apply to all retirement accounts. All right, James, you can talk about this. I mean, this is I'm going to, say, go ahead and answer this because this is a very generality, but not specific, but it says, what is the average return on investment on mom and pop self-storage? Do you have any stats on average return, the different self-direction options like REITs, mom and pops, or larger operators, et cetera? So if you can talk about that in terms of range, maybe, like you usually see this to this with these types and this to this with these types, if you have that kind of information.
You know, Bill, this is a great question. I'd have to refer to one of my other staff members when they're diving into those numbers. I don't think we have a lot on the mom and pop side of the house. Most of ours have been conversions and development opportunities. So we're running performance off of those new capital raise on the new developments. There may be some studies out there. I just don't have them with me, but I think it's a great question. I just know that typically when you think about a mom and pop, they're happy when they're 100% full. Well, you don't want to be 100% full because that means you're leaving money on the table. So it gives us an opportunity to purchase them and raise those rates and manage them more as a management company perspective. But I don't have any stats to share at this time.
Yeah. And to the person who answered that question, I mean, there's James' email address. If you want to follow up with him offline, I encourage you to do so.
Please do.
So the next question, can the self-directed IRA invest in the individual storage condos? The developer, and he went on to explain, the developer sells each unit within the property. Each location has an annual HOA, as well as the developer will manage the individual unit. I mean, sure, I don't see why not, as long as, and there's no I guess I don't understand the term condo in this individual storage condo, but James, do you know what that means? Have you heard of this?
I would believe what he's referring to is there is developers out there that are actually building, let's call it a larger storage unit, like a man cave perhaps, and they're actually going to be partialed separately. So it may still be one big building, but there's multiple units and they're considered like storage condominiums. So you have a deed and you have a real piece of property, but there's like a common ground driveway and common ground parking, I believe.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, sure. I don't see any reason why an IRA can't invest, as long as you're with all of these rules, bear in mind the self, I feel like I've beaten this to death, but bear in mind the self-benefit rule. A disqualified person is not allowed to use these storage units for personal use, right? So if your IRA owns a storage unit, a storage facility, you or any other disqualified person, so you as the account holder, your spouse, your ancestors, your lineal descendants and spouse of lineal descendants are prohibited from using any of those storage units. So in the storage condo that you talked about, sure, as long as it's not, I make the comparison to owning, a condo directly. If your IRA owns a condo, like that's an allowed investment. You just can't use that condo for personal use, right? You or your spouse or any other disqualified person. Okay, James, here's one for you. Are there any REITs that own solely storage units that you know of?
You know, so you have your Public Storage, Extra Space, CubeSmart. There's several publicly traded companies that they just focus in on self-storage. So if you just kind of do a Google search, you know, publicly traded storage facilities, they should be able to pull up the whole list. I think there's probably five or six currently that are publicly traded.
Okay, James. So this person asked you to expand a little bit on how a relationship with you would look exactly if they invested and partnered with you. I guess without getting into, you know, specifics around return on investment, stuff like that, but how does that arrangement work?
No, that'd be great. So they're going to reach out to me or our investors relations coordinator, where we're able to connect and share with them just our whole business plan. You know, what is our plan on purchasing and selling the properties, the timeline of our investments, a historical track record, what our forecast looks like. Because ultimately, whenever you're investing with someone, you're really investing in their team. So getting an understanding of who they are, what they're doing, and how they execute is a big piece, no matter where you're investing. You know, our goal is just to be able to be transparent, share with you who we are, what we're doing, and what our plans are. And a part of our investment side too is like, how do we make a positive impact? You know, as I had mentioned very early on, I experienced that fire. So we find ways to kind of give back to our communities with our investments, with different aspects. Even during COVID, we were hosted different drive-in movies. When no one was leaving their houses, we went out and bought drive-in movie equipment or hosted events. We do a couple fairs on our property, farmers market. So a lot of these developments, we're repurposing those outlots. And before they sell, we're doing different community events to help bring natural tenants traffic to our sites and providing ways to give back to our communities. But in a nutshell, we connect with our investors. We share everything that we have for them, our plan, our business plan, and our execution of what we're looking to do. So that's kind of the process. They'll just set up a meeting with us and we'll be able to share that. They can welcome to email me or check out our website and fill out the sheet, and someone will reach out to them with our investor relations.
And it's structured through an LLC, right? They would basically become a percentage investor into an LLC.
Yes, they'll have a pro rata share in our fund that gives them a portion of the ownership within that fund. Yes.
Right. Okay. So next question again for you, James. You indicated, wait, I'm sorry, I scrolled down a little bit. Average maintenance cost. You want to ask the question around average maintenance cost, I guess, for maybe on a per unit basis?
You know, that's a great question, Bill. With most of our properties being newer or conversions, our maintenance cost is really next to nothing because they're all new developments. So I probably won't be the best one to speak to that front on a maintenance cost. I think over time, there's a little bit more additional, but if you think about a storage facility, it's really metal, brick, stone. We're not repainting the floors. We're not putting in carpet like you would at an apartment complex. So on the maintenance side, it's very, very minimum. Even when we go to auction off the site, there's a $100 deposit that the buyer has to clean out the unit. If not, we keep the $100. So our turnaround cost is very, very little, if any.
All right. You indicated the current inventory is roughly 93% subscribed. Do you see a glut in storage units driving this trend downward? Do you see an increase in rural storage units?
You know, this is a very good question. So it really comes down to market specific. We talked about the supply index, supply and demand. You know, right now, I know that the construction cost is really, really high. So some of the projects are not penciling out as much. But I also know that the last 5 years, we've had quite a bit of influx of new supply hitting the market. So based on the micro market, it's going to be a hard one to answer. But there is some flow when a sense of some higher occupancy and some lower occupancy levels based on the market and how much new supply is coming on. So it's really going to be macro managed. I mean, I'd be glad to offline kind of explain that more through email of how that process works for the person who's asking that question.
Okay. So ask a little bit, James, about, you know, your guys' role around, are you, you know, really just helping investors do like syndications, invest in an entity that owns your units, or do you help individual investors buy and manage their own individual investment storage unit properties?
Great question, Bill. So we're mainly focused on acquiring properties or development to raise capital for passive investors. We do have a national podcast that we host every Tuesday, 9 Central, where we are helping other operators perform better, understand the industry. It's a live format where they can come in and ask questions. So if they're looking to learn more about the industry or maybe purchase their own properties, the platform is called Clubhouse. It's an audio podcast, and our Clubhouse room is the self-storage Clubhouse. And we have the call every Tuesday, 9 Central. So we have our own company, of course, Investor Group, BBI, and StoreCo, but on an educational side, I know what it's done for our team and our families, and we're also trying to educate others how to do it themselves. So if they want to charm in or come in, they're welcome to learn from our group of different investors and managers and other aspects that are on the call on a weekly basis.
Okay, here's one for me, which goes back to the prohibited transaction rules, and says, if you partner your IRA, or as he said, set up a joint venture at the beginning, can you then manage your property based on the personal investment? My answer to that is, if you're any percentage owner personally into, or if your IRA, let me rephrase that, if your IRA is any percentage owner into a piece of real estate, again, whether it's a rental property, self-storage, whatever it is, the prohibited transaction rules apply 100%. So for example, if your IRA owns 50% of a property and you own 50%, that doesn't mean you're allowed to stay in the property 50% of the time. So the same rule applies here. If your IRA is any percentage owner into a self-storage unit, again, I don't want to tell you that you're not allowed to manage a storage unit or any piece of real estate, because the IRS rules don't say that. But they do have rules that are fairly ambiguous around an indirect or direct benefit to you as the individual. And so that's where you're potentially, by providing management services for an asset that's owned by your IRA, you're providing an indirect or direct benefit directly to the IRA. You're essentially doing a contribution by providing labor. You're making an invalid contribution to your IRA. So you just want to be really, really careful around doing any kind of management role for any real estate investment in which your IRA is an investor. I'm not saying you absolutely cannot. I wouldn't. I don't. I have a couple of pieces of real estate in my IRA, and I have outside management people do it. James, do you guys have a current self-storage investment offering? And will the presentation be available after the call? I think this is one of those situations where you want to reach out to James to get some information. I mean, no, I don't think he's got a presentation lined up, but do you guys have a current offering that you're raising capital?
We are, and they're welcome to reach out to me, and we can connect offline and share more about our perspective.
Okay. Any experience with conversions of lower level spaces in urban areas?
If I'm reading this correctly, I'm assuming they're referring to maybe a conversion in
had Class A, Class B, Class C, right? Maybe.
So I'm trying to pull back that question. I think it's really going to come down the supply index, like how much demand is there. I think, you know, you can turn any building into self-storage, but there has to be, you know, viability in the market to absorb that new supply. I think if you're going to be converting, you're going to want to be, you know, climate controlled. You don't want to outdate your product right off the bat. So most of all of our developments have been climate controlled facilities. If they need more clarity, they're welcome to email me, and I'd be glad to help them through that question. But it's really going to come down to market specific.
Okay. And the last question I'm going to answer, which is, can you provide the past returns over the past 5 to 10 years for your passive investors? The answer to that is no, he can't, at least not through this format. So there's his email, James@theinvestigroup.com, reach out to him, and I'm sure he'll be happy to provide that. Maybe you can even just access it on their website. All right, James, that was great. Thanks for taking the time. And everybody, again, next month, we'll have another webinar about what we've learned about real estate investing from previous recessions. And if you're considering investing in self-storage, James is your subject matter expert. Don't hesitate to reach out. If you have any questions about self-directed IRAs, don't hesitate to contact me.
Bill, greatly appreciate the opportunity. And if there's anybody who needs more information about investing and other aspects with self-storage in general, be glad to help out.
All right, James, have a good one.
You have a wonderful day.
Everybody, take off. Have a good one. Bye.